This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It is the Anfield Wrap. And in a minute, I'm going to say that again because I'm going to be sitting with Rob Gutman, Philippa Smallwood and Dan Morgan and thank them very much indeed for getting together with me on a bank holiday morning very early on indeed. They all did that. They all came out. But since then, the news has broken about Naby Keita. So if you're wondering why we didn't talk about that, well, it hadn't broken whilst we were recording that show. We then go on after that show to record a gutter show, our transfer speculation show, where we discussed Thomas Lamar a lot. And in there, Dan Morgan actually anticipated the Keita situation, but we did not know anything about it at the time of recording either of those shows or the Anfield Wrap. If you don't subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, you won't be able to hear those other shows. But I'd say that this right now is a fantastic time to do so. You know, Liverpool rampant yesterday against Arsenal. Fantastic 4-goal victory on the one hand, on the field and off the field as well. You know, it seemed like there's a lot of momentum. Things are heating up now as this transfer window closes. So if you haven't yet subscribed, please do consider doing so. theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe for all that, plus so much of the other stuff that we do. I'll say what I always say. It isn't a test. You haven't got to listen to it all. People will find the things that they're interested in across the course of a month or so of listening to the Anfield Wrap. So if you haven't had the opportunity, then, you know, let's consider the fact that you might want to have a little look now. That'd be fantastic if so. Regardless, though, thank you so much for sitting down, listening to our free show that we do after every single game on a Monday, after every single weekend. So thank you anyway, because I feel at times we talk about the other stuff, but we should thank you for listening to this. So with no further ado, I'll hand over to me, who then hands over to everybody else. It's the Anfield Wrap. It is the Anfield Wrap, Liverpool City Centre on a bank holiday Monday after Liverpool have won by 4-0 against a fellow top six side. There's few better places to be. I've got Rob Gutman, Philippa Smallwood and Dan Morgan with me. And Rob, let's get stuck right in with how fantastic a victory that was for the Mighty Reds.
It was, wasn't it? I wrote in the preview piece that Arsenal perennially build as there for the taking for a side like Liverpool at the moment, because they play high up the pitch, and Liverpool have got fast lads who like to go through them, and I think they're going to get wise to this 1 year. But regardless of Arsenal's failings, Liverpool start so quickly. They start like a boxer who wants to have this done within one or two rounds. It's jab, jab, try to put Arsenal on the back foot. There's all kinds that has been written, and Sky focused heavily on Arsenal's deficiencies. They don't have a chance, any chance whatsoever, to impose themselves on that football match. Liverpool go hard, Liverpool go strong, they should score early. I think it benefits us that we don't, because it enables us to keep going. Doesn't enable us, we choose to be enabled, if that makes sense, to keep going. And keep going we do. And the breakthrough on 17 minutes is the most inevitable breakthrough you will ever see in a football match, ever.
I loved it.
You go, girl.
I'll be honest, before the match, I don't know why, sometimes I just feel so negative before a game kicks off, and I don't know if it was all the talk 24 hours before about Mignolet being dropped, and then, you know, all those doubts start to come in about the keeper again, and I don't know, I just had this like sinking feeling. I don't know if it was what you were talking about then, about how, you know, at some point you've got to think that Arsenal are going to wise up to, you know, people's strengths, and they're going to actually find a way to actually counteract that.
It's a bit like Everton in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
When's it going to happen?
At some point it's got to, hasn't it? And whether or not it was part of that as well. But honestly, within the first 10 minutes, I just thought, what the hell is I worrying about? And like you say, you know, the first goal, you know, just relieved all whatever tension that there was, because we hadn't taken the chances prior to that. And to be honest, Arsenal probably had their best spell when it was at 1-0 and our second goal by Mane just completely took the wind out of them, I felt. And I couldn't see any way back for Arsenal after that. I just thought they were outstanding.
What struck me, Dan, was we didn't score in the first 10. Instead, what you saw was Liverpool with much the better side and, you know, miss a really good opportunity with Salah. Well saved by Cech, but he should score. I mean, the goalkeeper should just not be in the equation. But what happens is Liverpool don't stop. They are irresistible to that Arsenal side at that point. They just don't stop, and they're going to make their life ridiculously difficult. They don't slow down. They just know we're going to get this done.
I think I agree. I think there's a real inferiority complex in that first 10, where it's just a massive case of now we're better than you. We're better than you, and we're going to prove we're better than you. And it gets set by a few players early on. I think Moreno has a really good, solid first 10 and he goes from there. And I think in a way that kind of settles everyone else down as well. Like Philippa says, you know, we all have these insecurities about certain players and stuff like that. But I think just off that back of that start, we're so dominant and there's loads of all over the pitch. Just give me that ball back. Get off the ball. This is my ball. You just, they make Arsenal so insignificant in a football match, and it's a real statement in terms of it's a side that is around us and is considered to be in and around where we're due to finish and where we're due to see the season out and a rival for us. So, I mean, I think a statement like that early on in a game like that it speaks volumes for me.
I think any Liverpool fan sort of coming out of that ground yesterday absolutely buzzing and then getting back to try and sort of gorge on an orgy of everybody realising how good we were would have been a little bit shocked and galled, I think, by the media's overall reaction. Because as you said, Arsenal are a top six side. They're a challenger for us getting a place in the top four. They've got Alexis Sanchez back. They're at full strength. They can even afford to put Lacazette on the bench. But yeah, anyone who focuses on that as possibly another Arsene Wenger mistake, it was just it was a symbol of the luxury of riches that he had at his disposal.
If you're going to be critical of them, you feel like they never learned lessons from Hoffenheim midweek. But that being said, I think the minute we get in behind anyone now, first 10 minutes in a game, you see them shit themselves, yeah. The opposition. You see them like, this is going to happen again. You can see it in them. It's built into them. It's an inherent fear.
If you look at the first chance we make, the one that Salah has smothered by Cech, Arsenal aren't 30 yards up the pitch there. We've cut a team open in the way the very, very best. Arsenal are quite compact and tight. It's a lovely little 1-2. A very, very quick movement. Is it Emery Chan who whips the final ball around? That's just top draw football. That's not about Arsenal, that. That's about us.
No, it is.
And that sets the tone, really, I think. And when the goal comes, there's no doubt it was going to come. I have to say, I had to keep... you said, Philippa, you're sort of nervous because it's Arsenal and, you know, they've got some things in their locker. But if you take a 1-0 lead over a team, I don't know, the bottom 13, you go, right, it's ours to lose now, right? We can shoot ourselves, but it is our game. You feel a great sense of relaxing. The key moment of the game has happened. You've taken the lead. I sort of realised, not at the moment we scored that goal, but within about 5 minutes of it, that this is our game to lose now. We were going to go on and win it. We're a much better team than them.
The difference for me now is because we've got so much pace in the side, we can afford to invite teams on when we're 1-0 up as well. And they can't live with us when we're on the break.
You know, we're ruthless.
Exactly. We're so, just quick. And, all our players are so clever for me because they pick the right thing to do at the right time. They know when to hit it early to Salah or to Mane. They know when to actually drive with it themselves. And I'm talking about Wijnaldum here and Emre Can, who I thought were absolutely outstanding yesterday. Yes. You know, the actual choices that they make when they're on the ball. And Firmino, for me, is so unselfish. I think he's the best forward in the whole league. I think some of the runs that he makes are so unselfish. And he opens up space for the people. He's always looking for the ball as well. But he knows when actually somebody else is in a better position than him and he takes defenders away so that they've got more space. I just think that we've got such a good blend of players here and, you know, I I don't want to get overexcited, but then I also think you have to go with the momentum of it. You have to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think Klopp does something interesting, which surprised me if you'd asked me 15 days ago. He a few defensive changes against Palace, he all but picks the same side. It's only tweaked. So he's gone, you know, okay, he's gone. It's early season, so someone could do with minutes in their legs. It's not the same set of decisions he might need to make in 2 months' time. But still, it's been courageous, I think, to pick the same, especially the same attacking players. Firmino, Mane and Salah have virtually played every minute. I think Salah has an hour off against Crystal Palace. But they've virtually played every minute. But I think that one of the benefits we've had from that gamble of sorts paying off is the synergy between them that you're describing, almost the telepathy of them playing so many games as a unit in such a short period of time has really, really worked. And I think we're seeing it in that midfield three. You know, if you had Coutinho and Alana fit and available tomorrow for a game against City, I'd be loath to break that because, we haven't mentioned Jordan Henderson yet, but him providing the pivot and the movement and intelligence of Wijnaldum and Chan off that, it's just stunning.
Yeah.
What really impresses me is how we're managing games now. And like you refer to the first 10 there, Neil, we come out and we basically set a precedent in that first 10. But I felt we kind of allowed Arsenal to have their spells in the game. We give them 5 minutes after the first goal. And it's like they don't have 5 minutes. We give them 5 minutes because we know they're going to have it anyway. But we're completely in control of it. It's not like it's a siege mentality where we're just hanging on at any time. And it's the same just after the break. We give them 5 minutes after the break, but we're completely bossing it. We're completely in control of the football match and it's how it's destination, how it pans out. By we say, okay, you can have these 5 minutes. You're not really going to lay a glove on us. And now we're going to go again. And it's brilliant. It's a massive, massive steps and leaps forward from the side.
You know what, Dan, is interesting. If you look at, you've seen the possession stats after the game. They edge it. It's nuts. Mm. I think if ever you want to sort of, in any kind of coaching course where you're talking about statistics, go, you know possession stats, you know how they're absolute bollocks. Here's a game of football. Watch it. Because nobody who came out of that ground would have gone, even if they thought, okay, yeah, Arsenal might have had more possession than you'd think for a team that's been absolutely annihilated. You wouldn't have gone, they edge it. They edge it, it's 51-49, something like that. But that's as comprehensive an annihilation as one good football team can do to another good football team. It should have been 80-20. That's what the eyes told you.
Yeah, the big difference for me though is, Rob, is that if Arsenal suddenly sat in and just said, right, we'll let you have all the possession, you can have 90% possession, we'll have 10%, you get the feeling this season we can win the game 1-0. If a team wants to go that way, you get the feeling that this team has it in them now to win that game 1-0, and there's not that anxiety that's there over the past season. And it's that whole thing of what you do against this side, it's impossible to set up against in some way, especially at Anfield.
Yeah, watching yesterday a sort of not being successful scoring early, but being relentless, it reminded me of the teams I grew up watching. I suppose in many respects, the 87-88 team is sort of the most comprehensive chance-making machine I've ever seen. That didn't need to have the ball for the entire game, but it had it when it wanted it to have it in explosive patches where it would just take the game away from teams. But that's to say that Liverpool sort of allowed Arsenal sort of strong possession, or that they played in front of us and probed. They didn't really.
No.
I just think we're in the results business. It's like Suarez used to have no interest in possession, I used to notice. The ball would come up to him, he would spin, go, flick, twist.
Yeah.
And then he could lose, but he'd probably lose possession sometimes 10 times in the first 20 minutes. Didn't give a fuck.
No.
This lot don't. They're going and going again. It's, what are the metaphors are escaping me here? You know what I mean, kids.
Philip, on that, just to come back to the midfield for a second, that midfield dominance. It wasn't long ago we were wondering about the shape in the middle of the park, and I think a couple of things have happened then. I think that Wijnaldum's come into a little bit of form, but I think he's possibly come into a little bit more fitness. He looked like he was struggling a little bit earlier on. But this side dominate the middle of the park yesterday. Yeah. You see them each dominate in a different way. I don't even think Henderson necessarily has his 8 out of 10 game, and yet he is pivoting that game, as Rob said before. You see Chan at times bursting through people like a 110-metre hurdler, and you're seeing, you know, Wijnaldum going past people, holding people off. In their own ways, they just, the superiority thing that Dan said before, they each impose superiority on the match.
Yeah, and I think earlier on in the season, they were people were describing them as being too alike. And I think yesterday you saw the qualities of each of them and you saw how actually different that they are as well. Henderson, for me, is a very smart footballer. He doesn't go chasing the limelight for me. He's quite willing to for people to underestimate him, I suppose, is one way of going about it. But he's willing to do the kind of dirty stuff and allow other people to take the credit and the plaudits. And, you know, yesterday, you know, you didn't notice him as much as what you noticed all the other players, you know, in particular Emre Can and Wijnaldum for me. But he's just as effective as what they are at doing what he's doing. It was interesting because when we played Hoffenheim in midweek, there was a fellow sat behind me and he actually turned around and said that he's the worst captain he's ever seen Liverpool have and he doesn't think he should be anywhere near this side. I'm wondering what player he is actually watching. Mm-hmm. Because it was probably a criticism I had of Gerrard when Gerrard played in a similar position. I felt he didn't quite have... I don't know, the nous in some games to just know when to sit and to just go, right, I'll just stay here then, let you lot do what you need to do. And, you know, I'll just keep my eye on what's going on up this end. It was interesting actually in the first 10 minutes we were talking about and quite a few times Henderson actually tried to put a ball over into the box, kind of like a deep cross ball, in a sense.
I want to talk about this a little bit in the context of all the men and what Rob said on possession before. I'll go to you first on this, Dan. There's things that we're doing. I'm trying to write the right way to phrase this. I think all three midfielders did it yesterday, and I think a couple of other players do it as well. I think Firmino does it, where we're not actually expecting to get results. Where so there's certain big balls that Henderson's trying to play. There's bits and pieces that Wijnaldum does, where what he's actually doing is he's putting doubts in defenders' minds and making them drop 5-10 yards. So we think, oh, the chip ball. You see the ball, you see a big diagonal that doesn't go to anyone. And immediately, because you're used to seeing, you know, a certain type of Liverpool, which is more about control, about retention of possession, and you think, oh, what's going on there? But actually, what we were doing was we were forcing Arsenal to defend in areas they didn't want to defend in by virtue of trying a certain thing and making them think, oh, they're going to try that. And that's especially pressing now that we've got Salah on one flank and Mane on the other. The idea that we can just force you back because you're going to realise how quick these lads are, even if this just goes into touch. Do you know what I mean? It's not the same as Charlie Adam ball, which is just wild. To me, it seems like it's a tactic of, even if this doesn't come off, lads, it's going to work for us.
I think they're really set up on situations. So I think they massively go for second balls. So like you say, if that ball is floated and, you know, there's a defender's head on it, we then play for that second ball and that situation. And then you see them in the scenarios before when they're warming up and it's been mentioned in training. That situation is then how we react to when that ball drops, and it's a situation we're not supposed to be used to. As Neil says, a switch ball, Alonso-esque, from centre midfield to fullback overlapping, gets you in a position where the fullback takes it on, he crosses it in a box, and you'd expect someone to be on the end of it. What the way this team plays in is that they'll play a ball that's speculative, that might not be on, or you might not get anything from, but they'll pick up on the bits and pieces. And I felt we were doing that a lot better yesterday.
Mm. They're high quality percentage balls, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm noticing, I mean, I think the fullbacks that we've brought in, are some old, some new, some coming through the ranks, and the way they're being coached and what to do in those positions is telling now. It's not Milner checking back and looking to bend one in, maybe find someone ghosting in on a header. Although Gomez does that kind of cross for the opening goal. But there's a lot of that low whipped ball. In fact, Chan does it for the first Salah chance. That's the ball we've been seeing from our fullbacks this season. It's a high quality percentage ball. It's a Beckham ball, quite frankly. It's a ball that I get the feeling. I think they're practicing it because there's a lot of them now seeing adept at it, but they didn't know they could do it. Neil was talking about Henderson was playing these balls for the back post, and a lot of them are frustrating at times. But what he is doing is he's doing when he gets the ball, he's doing it's his first touch. It's not he doesn't touch, look up, and then dink one in. It's his first touch. So he's trying to turn them around with the pace of it, and they're not settled. And as you say, the second ball is therefore on. Our boys are readier than theirs.
Yeah, they feel very much more drilled on what happens if it doesn't come off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a great way of coaching. Because
can we talk about what Salah's doing in those situations as well when he's getting these long balls hit quickly? Because of his pace, if anyone's 10 yards off him, Salah can turn that into a chance. He is a weapon we now have. I mean, people are, let's say we do nothing, let this transfer window, I don't think that's going to happen given what's breaking as we record this. If nothing else happens, it looks like we've got one high-quality, successful signing. We've gone through summers where we signed 5 or 6 lads and none of them are any good.
Yeah.
This lad is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing I'd say is that with players like him and just players in general, I mean, you've seen it from Henderson yesterday, the way this team set up, and I've not really seen it before, is that they can see a chance from the opposition centre midfielder having the ball 10 yards inside his own half. They can see a chance of being in on goal in 2 passes from that, where you steam in, you nick it, you play a 1-2 and you're in. And I don't think I've seen that before from a side who is that proactive in just seeing opportunity in every situation. And Klopp's talked about it a lot in the past, it's situations in the game, how we deal with certain situations, how we can turn sides over in certain situations. And it's really exciting to watch, I thought.
It's just so unpredictable. That's the thing for me. It's just so unpredictable. And I don't know how any team's going to know what we're going to do next.
The thing for me, I'll go back to you actually, Philip, is I think we are actually really quite predictable. But what I mean by that is that doesn't mean you can do anything about it. So use Mane as an example. He just gets in, checks in on his right foot, and he's going to put it in the bottom corner.
Mm.
But the thing about that is you can't rely on him doing that because it's 2 consecutive games. It's 3 times in 2 games where he's back-heeled someone in to create a chance on the overlap. So if you're defending that situation, you see someone running as though they're going to go for the overlap. You can see that he's coming inside. You also know he could also now choose just to go outside. It's not like his left foot's bad. You know, he's got a decent enough left foot.
He scores our goal of the season last season on the first day, doesn't he, against Arsenal?
With his left.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's... So my point about this is that you can think for all the world, but I know what he wants to do, but I've got all these other things to think about as well. So how do I stop him? And I think all over the pitch, when it works for us, and we can talk a little bit about when it doesn't in a minute, but when it works for us, you can know what we're going to do, but there's nothing you can do about it. And I think that's what, and again, to use the other, the when Rob's making the 87-88 comparison before, that was true with that team. You could know what they were all going to do. You could know that Ray Houghton's about to ghost in. You can know that John Barnes is about to play a certain type of ball or he can do something else, but you can scout this all you want. There's not actually a ton you can do about it if the space is there.
The knowledge, sorry for that, I'm going to cut it because it's reminding me of something. The knowledge can hurt you. It reminds me, there's a Shankly quote from the 60s where his team's accused of being predictable. And he says, yes, like Joe Louis, who was the great boxer of that era, I will just knock you out. And I thought it was it's one of the wonderful Shankly quotes that have been lost in time. But I think it summarises what all the great Liverpool teams should be about.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think it's so exciting. I really do. And it kind of disappoints me sometimes when I think people always seem to look for the negative out of everything that happens, you know, and they kind of dwell on the negatives rather than actually embracing all the positives. And, you know, I just look at even over the 2 years since Klopp has been here now, you know, I can only think of Stephen Colker. I may be wrong here, somebody can come in if they disagree, but I can only really think of Stephen Colker where I would go, out of all the players that we've got in, he's the only one that hasn't actually worked or done anything, and that was a loan signing.
Yeah, just to solve a stopgap problem.
Is it worth talking about the keeper for 2 minutes?
No, that's what I mean. We can't talk about the keeper because the keeper is perhaps on that list.
The grey area.
I'll go down first on this. The manager's been interesting afterwards. When I saw it, I just presumed he's bombed Mignolet here. Sort of pre-match, and I thought he's bombed him. It's done. He's bombed him. And to the point that I thought he's probably going to be sold by Thursday. So he made such a bold thing. And now he's saying he's going to start for him against Manchester City. What do you think he's thinking in amongst all of this, the manager?
I can't get away from the fact that he's brought Karius to the club. And a goalkeeper's one of them positions where if you're a manager and you bring a goalie in, you know, barring you bring one in the second or third choice, you bring a keeper into play, at some point that keeper's going to be in. And I had a weird premonition before the season started that he might just get the nod at the start of the season and it'd be out of left field. Look, I don't buy the rested thing at all. There's absolutely no reason to rest Mignolet. You don't rest your keeper to Arsenal at home, for me. It's absolutely bizarre. I've not seen Klopp do anything of the likes before. For me, what it is...
But he has already said he's going to start Mignolet at Man City.
But what I think we're seeing here, Neil, is a slow process of Karius getting back to being the first choice goalkeeper again. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think probably Mignolet's seeing his arse a little bit, because he's just being part of this process of being phased out, and he's probably seeing it in front of his eyes, and that's where I see this going.
I think that could be in Klopp's mind, that he sees Karius longer term. Do you think Mignolet's renaissance will eventually end and Karius will eventually show that he is the keeper that he bought? I think that might be in his mind, but I don't think that's what happened yesterday. I think I've tried to sort of try to eliminate logically what the possibles and impossibles here. There is no way, as you say, Dan, he's rested. That's bullshit. That was one of Klopp's tactical lies. The fact that he's bringing him back in, well, that says everything to me. It says to me there's no major disciplinary issue. What we forget sometimes, we think this is fairly binary. A player is either dropped because he's out of form or dropped because he's injured. He could also have a life. He could have a life.
Yeah.
He could have had some terrible thing happen. And it doesn't have to be the routine, a family bereavement. It could have been, say, boss, me and the missus had the worst argument in the world. I haven't slept. I don't know, whatever it is. Mm. Or we're just worried irrationally about one of the kids. I don't want anything out about the health. It could be a million and one things that normal people go through. And Klopp's just blanket protected him like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the likelier set of scenarios than the absurd one, which he did for all the right reason. He's rested. If he's phasing him out, then on the back of that, you don't go strong and go, Mignolet's back in next week.
No.
I think he's being nice to Simon Mignolet and not platitude nice. I think he's protected him. I think he's standing by him. And also, the evidence of our eyes is, and I fucking can't stand the goalkeeper that Simon Mignolet was 7 months ago, but I grudgingly am beginning to quite like the goalkeeper he's becoming. So I don't think there's any logic that says his number is up yet. I think you might be right in the long run, but I don't think that was evidence of it.
The only other thing that I can think of is that he wants to look at Karius and to decide if he is actually capable of being his long-term.
But you don't just do that. Coming out of a week where everything's been stable.
No, there's something gone on, and I think it is more likely to be something personal. And I think, you know, the club are never going to comment on that because it's not their place to comment on it.
No.
And, you know, it's unlikely that Mignolet is going to say what it is. But it was interesting because this morning I was reading a couple of pieces where, again, we're talking about the media putting on a negative slant on everything. And they were saying that Mignolet's time's up because it got leaked to the Belgian press. And it's just like...
What got leaked, sorry?
The fact that Mignolet was being dropped for the game. So like 24 hours before
the
game.
It's like a tautology of a thing though, isn't it?
It's just like, come on. You know, there's no saying that that's Mignolet that's done that.
But also, he's dropped him because he knew he'd do something wrong, like brief. What are they saying?
I don't
know. They can see into the future.
I disagree with all of you.
Go on, what is it?
I think he's given Mignolet reminders. And I think if you see it in that sense, that I think he thinks, and I think there's evidence, genuine evidence, that when Mignolet thinks he's got competition for his place, his level goes up.
Do you not think you do that against Palace at home, Rob?
No, because I think this is the manager being a manager. And in the same way that Alex Ferguson would sometimes be a manager and things would happen and you'd go, this doesn't make any sense. And you'd find out in the longer run whether or not they were right or wrong. And I think, I think that maybe you do it against Palace, but it may well be that he feels as though giving him the international break to reflect on the fact that he's not as secure in his place as he thinks, giving him the, you know, the idea that I'm prepared to manage you in this sense of I'm prepared. Don't think your place is secure. I can bomb you out tomorrow. I can bomb you out from nowhere. I'll bomb you out at home against Arsenal, mate, if I feel as though something's not right. And then putting him back in, I think, is the idea. And I think you've seen it right the way through. So even for Brad Jones, and Brad Jones should never have been competition for Mignolet. He literally jumped the wrong way at Old Trafford. But when Mignolet got back in after that, you saw him go up another level, and then the whole team went up another level at the start of 2015. I think you see it last season with Karius. He comes back in a couple of times around Karius, and he improves. And I just wonder whether or not there's been some sort of internal thing where someone said to the manager, I've been saying for a while, you know, penalty save, he's getting a little bit too comfortable, this fella. You might need to have a little think about this. And that's the action that he's
probably
took.
When he's good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we often, there's another factor, which they play football all week long and we don't see it.
Exactly.
Karius could have just been sensational. They could have been scratching his chin Klopp with Pep Linders and Acteberg goes, he is a better keeper than the Mignolet. I know we haven't seen it in games, but he's a better keeper.
But what it also does, though, is it also gives the relevance hope to Karius and to Danny Ward. So now you're in a situation where it manages all three of them in one move. Because all three of them now don't know who he's going to pick for the next game. Albeit he has now said that Mignolet will be back in for Man City. But what I mean is it could be anyone who's in goal at home against Sevilla. He might just, you know, against Burnley, he might just lash Danny Ward in. And what that does is that dangles a huge carrot around everyone. Everyone's bouncing into Mel Wood, all three of them, because Mignolet's got something to prove, something to hold on to. Carrius has got something to aim for. And even Danny Ward is now going, you know what, I can be Liverpool's first choice goalkeeper by the end of this year. And everyone says, and I believe in general competition for places for goalkeepers is a bad thing, but I believe that if you've got David De Gea in goal, like David De Gea just needs to know that you think David De Gea is brilliant. Whereas there's, as I say, that if there wasn't a literal body of evidence to say that Mignolet improves when he's got pressure on him, then I wouldn't necessarily buy this, but we've seen it.
Do you think what about the fact that he's not even in the squad? I suppose, does that just allow Klopp to do this? Why, yeah. If he wants to put a rocket under him,
I think
why
Klopp
protect him like that? Why not go, no, you're on that, I'm just rotating my keepers?
But, well, that because he doesn't need that to be an external thing. He doesn't need that conversation to be an external conversation. He doesn't need that to be the topic on Sky Sports. He's done it. He's put it in Mignolet's mind. That's where it matters. It doesn't actually, you think about everything Klopp says. Klopp says all the time, you know, that elongated interview that with Melissa, which was terrific, where Klopp's saying about, you know, what's said externally is often not helpful. So Klopp will just send the message out he wants externally as long as he's got the message, I think, internally that he wants to send. And he, as I say, he's not just sent it to Mignolet, but he sent it to all three of them. And that's what I think's happening here. And for your why Arsenal thing, why do it for Arsenal? Well, there's the length of time, there's where it falls. That falls in the middle of the five games. So then, you know, it's a little bit different. But my other thing is I think Klopp thinks we're going to batter Arsenal. I genuinely think Klopp thinks we're going to batter Arsenal. We're going to batter Arsenal Sunday. So it doesn't matter what I do with the fella in goal. I can do this and I think Klopp thinks that and is proven to be correct. Whether or not he's proven to be correct on the goalkeeper thing long term, well, I'm saying it like he will be. He may not be. It's a risky thing to do. But if you imagine Klopp was Ferguson, you'd think I was right. If you see what I mean. If you imagine Klopp as Ferguson, you'd think I was right. Because Klopp isn't Ferguson, then, you know, I might not be. But it's a very Alex Ferguson move.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? You've half persuaded me. I think we're going to need more information. I think Mignolet at some point is going to say something on this. If Mignolet does say something on this, like he comes in against City, hopefully does well, and goes, yeah, that rest really did me good. I understand. Took me aback a bit, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. It's a really hard one to read. I mean, we're not talking about is how Karius actually played, because it definitely is a mixed bag.
Well, it was.
He's not tested it on, is he, in terms of shot stopping?
No.
Two great punches under pressure.
Yeah.
Great with the ball at his feet in terms of, well, no, sorry. Let's start that again. The worst goalkeeper I've ever seen with the ball at his feet in three situations where he needed to see a goal. His kicking was good, though.
Yeah.
I think that sums it up.
I think that his positioning is really interesting when we're at the other end of the pitch. It's unbelievable. I mean, we ended up yesterday in some situations where we didn't have a single outfield player in our own half. And Karius is literally halfway to the halfway line. And you're just like, if somebody gets the ball there, first thing I'd do is try and like whack it one and get it in the goal. Yeah, but the chances of somebody being able to do that is very, very slim. I mean, you only have to look at how many goals has been scored like that. But
that was, you know, from the very first game he played pre-season against Tranmere, season before this one. That's where I was shocked that he positioned himself.
Yeah.
On. And what I don't get is it seemed instructed, and yet Mignolet doesn't do that, does he?
He definitely doesn't go as far up.
No.
And you kind of feel like the defenders feel like they have to be closer to Mignolet than what they do with Karius.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just something that I noticed, and you know, I just wouldn't be passing the ball back to him when there's a forward from the opposition within 5 yards of him.
He really needs to switch on when he's in possession of the football. He thinks he's got so much time than he does have, and do you know what? Other than that, I don't think he's that bad. You know, I don't think, for a young keeper coming over from Germany. I'm oddly reassured with him on set pieces and crosses. I think he has no qualms with coming and getting something on it. Where sometimes with Mignolet, you're just wondering about whether he's gonna come at all, whether how late his shout's gonna be, stuff like that I've referenced before. He just, yeah, it's that thing of when he's in possession, he becomes so blasé. But the one thing I wasn't into yesterday was the whole ironic cheering when he, you know, from the own crowd when he's booting it out and we start. And I know he brings a lot of it on himself, but it's just, it doesn't help anyone. And I just think, like, all right, you know, the lad is putting the nerves into everyone at some point during a game, but it's not helping anyone.
Did you think that was out of the chair? I almost thought that was like positive reinforcement of just do that.
I thought at first it was, but I thought it got a little bit ironic.
Mm. No,
after about
the third
or fourth time, and I was just, Klopp turned around to the main stand and just give like a really like dirty look, shake of the head at one point with it. But he does bring a lot of it on himself. That's the thing. The turning back in and stuff like that, or the just the feeling that he thinks he's got more time on the ball than he has. And sometimes you just feel like he hasn't really got a plan about what he's going to do with it when he's got it. And in the end, you just think, well, we'll just lump it and then we'll go again from there and play those percentages that we talked about and we referenced earlier. But other than that, you know, I think there is a keeper in there. I think there definitely is a keeper in there. He's got a good frame. He's got a good presence at times. And like I say, he's quietly confident coming for stuff as well. So a little bit more experience, I think we might see him get in. But I love what you're saying before, Neil, when you come to think about it. I think, like Rob says as well, these players are human beings. Mignolet might have just had two really bad weeks in training. And Klopp thought, I need to put a rocket up his arse here and then we'll go from there. But I don't know.
Defensively, I was impressed by the individual performances yesterday. I know it was a day to be sort of everyone's a hero kind of day, but Lovren and Matip in particular, especially the last two games, Matip suddenly returning to being that player that we suddenly were acclaiming as a great signing first half of last season, and we sort of lost sight of it. We haven't lost sight of it. He hasn't been great, has he? Except for a while, Matip. I noticed particularly against Hoffenheim, I think he was tested in that second leg at times. And yesterday, yeah, he was tested at times, but he dealt with everything. Such authority. When he's good, he's very, very good, Joel Matip. I don't know if that's just me. I was spending a lot of time looking at him for some reason.
No, I felt he was really good yesterday, and he had a big part to play in the third goal as well.
Did he?
Yeah, he cleared it really well. Headed it out from the corner, and then Bellerin made a cock up at the you know, when the ball came to him. But
Salah's goal.
Yeah.
Who's the assist then on that? Is there no assist?
I don't think there is one because Bellerin's a Muppet, but anyway.
It's Bellerin with the assist.
Yeah.
Or Sadio Mane with his run to block off the centre-halves.
I think, have you ever seen someone clean through that high up a football pitch? I don't think that's just about as high up as I've ever seen someone get a clear run.
It reminded me, and it's happened a couple of times now, and I was saying when it happened against Hoffenheim the first time, I was saying, how often do you see that? And it actually, because it happened to him a few minutes before.
Yeah.
But also, it reminded me, do you remember that great Vlady Šmicer one? Against United, where he was clean through. He'd been fouled and was clean through for 50 yards, and he just waited to the ideal moment to collapse onto the floor.
Who was his?
Luke Chadwick, someone
wrote in a report, Schmeichel was clean through on goal until a horse ran on the pitch and knocked him over.
Yeah. he basically was getting fouled for so long, and then he just picked his moment to go to ground.
It reminded me of Babel Arsenal.
Champions
League, where he seems like he's running for an eternity, and like basically the cop doing the old shanklism of sucking the ball into the net,
but watch it back. The Hoffenheim one where he misses the other week, he does take his first touch, I think, like 2 yards inside our half. But this one, that first touch is almost 20 yards inside. It's mad.
Yeah.
The fact what's better for him is he doesn't have to worry about keeping the ball under his feet for so long.
Yeah.
He pings it 15 yards, then lets his pace do the rest. So those defenders weren't getting anywhere near him, and he's able to pick his spot. I mean, some people have commented how Sadio Mane actually runs behind him with his arms out, holding Arsenal defenders off. But I also think sometimes when you have too much time like that. In fact, apart from that one time that Demba Ba had too much time and still scored against Chelsea. But a lot of the time, too much time is a bad thing.
There's an infamous Heskey miss against Crystal Palace where Heskey's clean through like that for ages and he makes such a show of it. And it was around the time that everyone decided wrongly that they hated Heskey.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things that did for him in the end.
Benteke, I think, had one last season, didn't he?
Benteke had a clean through for it. Well, that was when we had the...
Twice.
Yeah, when there wasn't a keeper and all sorts of nonsense was going on. There is, on the defending... I'll go to you next on this, Dan. There is across that. I'm glad that Rob said, you know, individual performances across the board, because Gomez plays well at right back. Moreno does well. And Lovren wins his battles. I think it isn't that Arsenal have absolutely nothing in the game. It's back to what you were saying before about Liverpool controlling it. In a less ostentatious way than what you saw in midfield with Chan and Wijnaldum, where Wijnaldum's putting Ramsey on his arse 19 times in 3 minutes or something mad like that. What you actually see at the back is each of them individually just wins the battles. Arsenal test every bit of that back line, and not one of them is able to really come out with anything.
No, I thought both fullbacks were excellent. I thought Gomez was excellent. I thought he really was. And it's great to see now, like we referenced last week, he feels part of this squad now, and he feels part of something, and he feels like he's getting his game once every few weeks at a minimum. And to get his fitness up and get him at the level of match sharpness can only be beneficial to us. But it's really interesting that Lovren looks really in control at times. He gives that foul away where he takes the yellow, but it's a great foul, and it's a great yellow because he's spun and he's in behind, and he doesn't look rash and he doesn't look out of control at any point. Moreno has a good first 10, as I've referenced, and he settles right into it. And there's just a thing of the back four just being completely reassured and in control of the situation. But I think when we set up against wing-backs especially, I think we just absolutely nullify that area of the pitch that they play in. Because Arsenal are really wide with the wing-backs, and you shouldn't be like, you don't feel sorry for them, but you can see they're in a position where they're going, well, hang on, you're expecting me to get beyond their full-back and get to the byline, but also we're getting ripped in behind here by their wingers and their forwards, so I've got to be back as well. So like, they end up in this no-man's land space of about 30 yards in the middle of the pitch, and we just make that area completely redundant. We don't play in it, we don't entertain it. So our fullbacks then are allowed to join in, and when we create these triangles that we have in the last third of the game, and I think you can see that Liverpool are defending a lot better as a team, is what I'm getting at. And you know, the back four and the midfield three are completely entwined with each other in when they push up, when they drop back, what they're doing as a unit a lot more. And I think that it's more reassuring for the likes of your Lovrens then, who can just focus on what he needs to do rather than try and sort stuff out all over the pitch, which we referenced a few weeks ago.
The interesting thing for me with the fullbacks is that we're just not missing Klein at all. I was obviously concerned at the start of the season because obviously you've got Trent, who's really young and inexperienced, and then you've got Gomez, who's, you know, let's face it, he had a really bad injury. You know, he's taken his time coming back from that. And for me, I'm struggling to see how Klein gets back in the side at the minute. And
I don't think you'd edge out either of the two young lads for Klein just right now. You might do if you go, and this is a European away and I just need the back door shut properly. And Klein's a good footballer. He does give you things going forward. But I've been reminded about how much more a fullback can give you going forward this season. Yeah. That's been one of the biggest pluses in this very short period. On both sides of the pitch, by the way. I thought Milner had a great season, but I think Moreno at his very best at moments, and he's still got amount of critics out there, but at his very best has given us more than Milner did pre-season into the actual season. And I think both Trent and Gomez have given us more than Klein did. It feels like, you know, City, they can stick their Danilos and their Kyle Walkers and those and Mendy's. We feel like we've got new full-back options here in an attacking sense. There may be tougher defensive tests to come for those kind of fullbacks, but we'll see.
You kind of get the feeling that the whole team are helping the fullbacks as well, though.
Yeah.
There's always a little shuffle over. There's always a pass back if it's coming to them. There's always a bit of a filling in if they get caught out. And it's nice to see that. It's nice that they recognise that, you know, these lads haven't played much last season and that they might just need that little bit of integration more than others. And it's good. You feel like everyone's chipping in to make sure that there's no knock-offs.
I'll tell you what we're being reminded of, though. We're being reminded of what this Liverpool team actually looks like when, A, it's got two wingers in it, but what it's got when it's got Sadio Mane in it. Because we forget, the Liverpool team up to Christmas last year is a devastating force of nature. When we were making the 87-88 comparisons then, it was fantastic for the main part of that season. Winning big games, winning against the bottom sides, emphatically. And then suddenly from January to May, Mane doesn't play half the games, I don't think, because he loses a month for the AFCON and he loses 6 weeks because of that injury. So we just don't have him. And for a small part, he's getting back a couple of weeks, he's getting back some sharpness as well after the AFCON, although it's pretty quickly back in the swing of things. So that makes a massive deal to fullbacks, to have a Sadio Mane with you. He stretches the entire pitch. Now you've got a Mohamed Salah as well. Yeah. This is a massive thing. And look, we can't stop. We haven't really touched on Mane apart from that exceptional goal he scored. But everything he's doing is just awesome at the moment. He's just such a top draw footballer. And if we can keep him fit all season, everything is possible for us.
There's just to stay with that for a second. we've touched on sort of the each of the front three separately.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked about the fact that the front three have all functioned against Watford. All three of them score, albeit Firmino's is a penalty. Mm. But Firmino's integral, for instance, in Salah's goal, where he dinks the keeper and that there's Salah at the back post to force it over the line. We're looking now at another game here where Liverpool scored four goals and each of the front three's all scored. And then Daniel Sturridge just come off the bench to score as well. Yeah. Four attackers on the pitch, all four have hit the back of the net.
Yeah.
I think, Rob, it's you can get carried away. You can end up sounding like you're getting carried away, but it is about as dangerous as a front three as Suarez, Sturridge and Sterling were. And they, in turn, were probably Liverpool's first proper front three since, you know, it wasn't a partnership of Gerard Torres or something like that. It was three. And, you know, Heskey Owen, it was instead that was a three. And then you've got to go back to Barnes, Beardsley, Aldridge again to pull back to 87, 88 one more time. And I think that's one of the reasons why 87, 88 staying with people is because it's a three. Mm. And it was a three last season. And we're doing all this without Coutinho. There's no Coutinho in amongst all of this. And people have been acting as though, well, what are Liverpool going to do with no Coutinho? Now, listen, we'd only improve with another really good footballer. But it's the front three that people can't live with.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. And sometimes it's hard to see just how good it is.
When it's in front of your eyes.
I just say, visualise a world where all three are gone next season. And actually, and welcome to Brendan Rodgers' reality in the autumn of 2014. Mm. I think it's a fright in its potential, as was the Sterling, Suarez, Sturridge front three, in its potential, it's as good a front three as the club has had. I really think that highly I would rank them. It is stunning. And I think if you can add a body so that you go, it's a four, it's three from four, that would be a massive thing. Yeah. I mean, Coutinho, if he's available yesterday, I don't want him in that front three. And just right now, I'm not readily chucking one of the three behind him. And we're moving slightly away from the front three to the middle three. And that's a very, very good place for us to be in. Coutinho, does he step back? If he stays, does he step back into that three seamlessly? Do we go back to being the machine we were last autumn? I think probably we do when he's in the groove. And that's a wonderful thing. If we sign lads from southern French teams as well, it's all bets are off. I think we're in a strong place. You know what? See, we can get carried away, but I think that we were right to get carried away last season, but it got carried away from us. We lost Coutinho, who was vital in that front three, and then we lost Marnes. We lost the two of them from mid-December to the end of February. And we never quite get them. We get Coutinho back in fits and starts, recovering from injury. Then we lose Mane. And quite frankly, there is their backup man, their wingman, Adam Lallana, who then goes missing. Jordan Henderson goes missing. So I think there's a narrative that this was a Liverpool team that flattered to deceive last season. I don't think it was. I think it's a Liverpool team that got fucking injured last season. Lallana, Henderson, Coutinho.
I'm going to stop you there. I think last season, Liverpool finished 1 point ahead of Arsenal. Hmm. And we played Arsenal now twice last season and once there. Yeah. And we are not 1 point better than Arsenal. We are 15 points better than Arsenal.
Yes.
So the idea that Liverpool flattered to deceive, I actually think that's incorrect. I think Liverpool underperformed last season. And I think we're able to see that now in the context of looking back. Liverpool should have got a minimum 6 more points last season. They should have broken 80 points. Liverpool's ceiling is not 80 points, whereas Arsenal's probably is 75. If you see what I mean, the best Arsenal can hope for across the course of a season is 75. Liverpool should be able to hope for 85. And last season, they either, if 76 might be par, but you know what I mean? Liverpool did not do as well as they could last season.
Yes, I mean, I'm hoping what we're seeing is, let's compare it to the Brendan Rodgers 13-14 season, which was the last truly devastating Liverpool team. And it's not that, it's fortunately it's in very recent memory. But that season was, we were getting big, big glimpses of it the season before in Brendan's first season, post-Christmas, when he brought Coutinho and Sturridge in. And suddenly we went from being this sort of floundering side who'd had a difficult year under Kenny, a difficult first half for Rodgers, to suddenly a team that was going to Newcastle and winning 6-0, was thrashing Fulham on their ground, was suddenly winning threes and fours at Anfield again. Blips in between. But it finished the season, what, about sixth? And everyone was going, yeah, and what? And then suddenly, with a full season, with that group of players and with Sterling coming into the mix, it was a devastating force. Again, all whipped away. Sturridge gets injured. Sterling, okay, fair enough there. And Suarez gets taken away. Gerrard retires. So it's all taken away. I think we saw a glimpse of what was to come in the first half of last season. Yep. And I think that is the real Liverpool. And it's not a team that conceded goals for fun. And it is a team that scored goals for fun. It needs, because it's now facing European football, it will have bigger tests to come and it will need a squad. And this week is vital.
Yeah. I'm really excited about how young the side is as well. Mm. When you look at the age of all our best players, they are all at a very good age, and I would say that none of them are at their peak yet. And that has got to be frightening for other sides. We were talking about the front three earlier, and I think each and every one of them is going to be worth 20 goals for us this year. And if you think those three can get us 60 goals, then you're going to have Emre Can, maybe Coutinho, Henderson chipping in with a couple, Wijnaldum's going to get a few. I just think that, you know, it's up to us where we finish. I think that it's going to be very difficult for other teams to live with us. You look at United and, yeah, okay, they've won two games 4-0, but, you know, they're not against the quality of sides of Arsenal. I know Arsenal weren't great yesterday.
United are a good team, but why do they suddenly go up this quantum level that people are saying? Just because of Matic and Lukaku, I'm not quite buying it.
I don't know. For me, you know, Lukaku, I've watched a lot of him, obviously, with Neil being an Everton supporter, and I just...
I thought, is that some dig? I'm missing it. That's a bit harsh. Blue Neil.
Yeah, exactly.
Blue curious.
I just don't see how he gives you as much as what any of our front three give you. I really don't.
I think they might. I think, without digressing onto it being a let's slag United off chat, but it may come to be shown that because he is a frustrating player, Lukaku, who will get goals, but his movement is not brilliant. They may have a problem that Ibrahimovic gave them in a different kind of way. Anyway, let's hope so.
How impressive this side is.
Yeah. The front three, just going back to them, I have a thing where I think they don't actually need much coaching, because maybe with the exception of Salah, they're so tactically aware and they're so switched on to how to create space for each other off the ball. It's something to see when you're actually watching them in the flesh, just how much they create for each other by not touching the ball is unbelievable. And the other thing is just how much they're enjoying it. All three of them are just having a great time playing for Liverpool. And I think there is an element that, you know, he will put them in situations, the manager, and he will say, well, in this situation, like we talked about before, you can just run with this. And you've got the pace, you've got the skill, you've got the knowledge, and you've got the tactical awareness to open teams up. So once we get in those situations of final thirds, with those three players, there's physically teams looking at us thinking, I don't want to come up against these three. It's massive. It's absolutely huge. And we could do with probably one more in that mould who can come in and add to that should one of them get injured again. Because I think just on last season as well, I think what does the manager said in last season is that what should be a two or three game blip turns into 2 months.
Yeah.
And we don't know how to get out of it. And that's all.
There's lack of personnel though, isn't it? If you look back in the cool light of day, it's not just form.
No, it's not just form, and that's why I'm saying we probably need another Mane to go in with the Salah that we got to be another Mane, because now we need another Salah / Mane, if that makes sense. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So like it is that worry that should there be one or two injuries to the front three, then we could lose rhythm. But I think that tactically aware that they can play this way. They can react to however the team sets up. So, you know, they can grind and they can say, all right, it's gonna be a day where we're patient and we'll win it 1-0, or they can say, well, okay, you wanna come at us or go 3-on-3 or whatever else, we'll just rip you apart and we'll be in behind. And they really look like they're enjoying playing the football for Liverpool, which is brilliant.
Do you know what we haven't mentioned in this festival of enjoyment of our team? The man of the match, I think, where most people's man of the match, Emre Can, which is nuts. And I suppose it's the only cloud on the horizon that we haven't nailed him down. I was thinking about Matt, as we were talking about Manu, I was thinking, Mourinho would love Emre Can. He would love him. We've got to offer him a silly amount. I mean, what I enjoyed about his last couple of performances in particular is, I feared sometimes when we haven't got Lallana and Coutinho's not an option in midfield, that Henderson, Wijnaldum, Lallana is a bit blunt. But but Chan seems to have worked out how to make himself vital, a vital attacking midfield player. No, yeah, an essential attacking midfield player. He's doing everything at the moment.
Do you know where it was summed up as well, that third goal? That run that he makes, absolutely bombing on to try and make another option for Salah was just... It just summed him up for me. It really did. The energy, the fight in him. I think that's the thing that really impresses me with him. You just feel like he's grabbing games by the scruff of the neck now, and you know that's something that we need.
Okay, been a fantastic week. Just to sort of sum up off the five games, really, just want to sort of fly around the table. Liverpool got the toughest possible draw they could have got, really, in the Champions League qualifiers. They got themselves out of that. Two wins against Hoffenheim, 7 points from the league games, a Champions League group that combined the idea of going for a pint with also being something that you can get through. It could have gone better, and I think if the situation at Watford in the last minute is handled better, we're sitting here talking about perfection from what could have gone. As it is, I think it's been a more than adequate start to the season on the pitch from the Reds.
Yeah, and I think, even for me now, but I think looking back as the season goes on, a point at Watford won't look like a bad result at all. I don't think there's many that'll turn up there and turn them over. To accentuate the positives as we've done today, I think what you're seeing from this team in these bulk of games already is just an ability to do those different things that we've not always seen last season. So, you know, we have the ability to be patient in a game, to sit in a game, to wait. We have the ability to come out the traps like we've seen before, and they're showing a real variety to what they can do as a group of players. And it's just nice for me to see a lot more players involved. It feels a lot more like a squad this season. It feels like there is 17 or 18 who are involved in what Liverpool are doing, rather than the 13 or 14, possibly 13, I'd say, we've seen last season. And that just feels a lot less knife edge. It doesn't feel like it could fall off a cliff at any one point. And for me, I think there's a lot of positives to take from these five games. All right, we always strive for perfection, don't we? But, you know, if we can get some things done on Thursday, I think Liverpool Football Club as a place just looks like a whole different world.
I think that's a really important point, and it was something that I've picked on so far this season. I think Klopp maybe feels he made a bit of a mistake last season, not trusting more of his squad. As in, when maybe players were a bit tired, maybe on the verge of maybe picking up an injury, that he didn't trust somebody else to go in and do that same job, and therefore ending up with injured players. And I think that
Firmino came off on 80 yesterday again.
Yeah.
Yet another time. Firmino was very, very rarely substituted last season. And
yeah,
I think he's been
exactly
subbed four times around the 80-minute mark so far, and once on the 90-minute mark.
Yeah. And the other thing is as well, if you're playing other players more regularly, so I'm thinking like in full-back areas here, so you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold and you've got Joe Gomez. On the other side, you've got Moreno and you've got Robertson now. If they're getting regular games, say they're playing once a week, once a fortnight, they're keeping the match fitness up as well, and they're keeping in a rhythm of sorts. The problem that we had last season is that because he didn't trust some of the other players, when they came in, they were rusty and we suffered for it. And I just, it's the one thing that I've really took away from these five games so far, that I could be completely wrong. Maybe it's not Klopp's realised that he's made a mistake last season, but that's what it feels like to me. It feels like he's constantly learning, and I think that is so good. And I think, again, it's just another real positive to take forward.
Philippa mentions the squad, Dan mentions Thursday. Rob, we're about to do a transfer show now in a second. Liverpool have been linked to Lamar, the lad at Monaco. You're expecting a big week.
Yeah, how many days have we
ins
got?
Ins and outs, by the way. I mean, you know, the club's Chapel Street should be it shouldn't be a bank holiday Monday in Chapel Street, I'll tell you that now for nothing. I might go and knock.
Can we see him from one of our windows?
We can sort of see them, yeah, from where we are.
We're right in the heart of the action here, boys and girls. And we're going to be doing transfer shows a go-go all week, one today. Woke up this morning and not thinking about, just they're still basking in the 4-0. And now we won the football yesterday. Hopefully we win the transfers today. As we've been recording, the Lamar story is intensifying. There are a few other rumours bubbling under. I'm not giving up on Naby Keita until I'm the last man standing at 10:59 on Thursday. Virgil van Dijk, Jesus Christ, that could happen. There's loads to look forward to. How many shows are we going to do on this?
We're probably going to end up on 3 or 4, I think, I'm going to sit down and work it all out this afternoon. So we're going to be looking at sort of 3 or 4, but one to do right now, which will be available behind the paywall. £5
damn
a month.
Right it is, with that value.
With that value, £5 a month. £5 a month if you want to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. If you haven't done it yet, it's going to be an exciting week, but you don't just need the transfers. Liverpool have beaten Arsenal by 4-0, and Liverpool look like they can score at any time, score at will. Liverpool look as though they may well end this season as the top scorers in the country. Last time that happened, last time that looked like it was the case, it was the best season of our lives. So let's just say this. Liverpool have beaten Arsenal by 4-0. Liverpool have kick-started the title race. It started yesterday. Let's go, Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.